Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Divorce is a difficult and trying time for anyone. The loss and pain associated with divorce often brings out the worst in people. Driven by feelings of loss, rejection, fear, and revenge, people often find themselves acting in irrational and often hurtful ways. If it's that difficult for the adults involved, imagine the children. Children of a high-conflict divorce often find themselves caught in a storm of emotional volatility that they're ill-equipped to deal with. Dr. Ronald Emery, director of the Center for Children and Families at the University of Virginia, sums up the realities of divorce with children when he says, "Many couples believe that divorce is the end of their relationship and the end of their troubles with their spouse. But for many divorcing parents, the opposite turns out to be true because they find themselves battling over, through, and on top of the kids." Well, today I have the unique opportunity to discuss divorce options with a panel that includes a marriage and family therapist, a family law attorney, and a family court magistrate judge. My three guests each have a unique perspective on divorce and the impacts of a high-conflict divorce and how it affects families and children. Ashley Barrera is an LMFT, which is a licensed marriage and family therapist whose focus is on marital counseling, co-parent facilitation, and parent coordination services. Allison Mandel is a family law attorney who has been working with divorcing and divorced families for almost 30 years. Suzanne Cole has lived and practiced law in Alaska for almost 25 years. She's a graduate of Northeastern University School of Law and has been a magistrate judge since 1997. I appreciate you all taking the time to join me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Need to take just a second to remind our listeners how we can be reached with your questions or comments. You can call us locally at 550-8433, or if you're listening outside of Anchorage, you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, and you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you're a first-time emailer, you got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. Okay, let's start out just briefly with touching base with each of you on what you're doing, what your role is in divorce, and why you kind of agreed to come on the air and talk about this this difficult topic with me. We can start with you, Judge Cole.
Okay, I am a magistrate judge, as you said, here in Anchorage. I do a lot of divorce work in various forms, both dissolutions and uncontested divorces, as well as the early resolution project and the motion resolution project, which I think I'll be talking about later. And those are with contested divorces. I'm also the chairperson of a parenting coordination task force, which Ashley and Allison are both members of, and we're actively moving forward with putting together that program.
Now, I had a show a few weeks ago, I guess it was, or a month ago now, with Dr. Matthew Sullivan, who is is sort of consulting, I think, with some of the parent coordination stuff. He's coming up and doing a training on December 11th and 12th. I did a training with Ashley and Dr. Sullivan in Vancouver last year. So really good information if you want to go back and check out that show. That's parenting coordination. So we'll talk a little bit about what that is as we get more into some of these options. So Allison, you have been doing this for a minute, and you've seen a lot of families and a lot of divorces. So what's kind of been your experience and where are you coming from with this?
Well, as you said, Prentice, I have been doing it for almost 30 years, and my own approach, I think, has evolved quite a bit over the years. And you know, I've come to be a big believer in collaboration, alternative dispute resolution, peaceful and respectful ways of getting divorced, resolving issues of child custody. And in all those, it surprises a lot of people, all those solutions are things that lawyers could and I think should be involved in. Many people think that talking to lawyers means that they're going to war, which I will talk more about during the next hour, but that's certainly not necessarily the case. My personal professional goal is to help people get less stressful, more civilized divorces.
It's tough for lawyers to overcome that I think, reputation as sharks. Somebody says, oh, you hired an attorney? Well, I guess I'll get mine. And then it starts.
That's true. And I have to say that there are many attorneys who have earned that view, that they are, in fact, sharks and take that approach. So, you know, the consumer has to be a savvy shopper.
Tough to change perceptions. Ashley.
Prentice, thanks for having me. My background started out in early childhood. I'm an infant, toddler, Montessori teacher is where I started working with families, and I've always found myself to be an advocate for children. And as I decided that I wanted to be a therapist and decided that I wanted to be a licensed marital and family therapist, I started seeing couples come into my office that were potentially considering divorce, or I would work with a child whose parents were going through or had been through a divorce. And looking at the impact that a high-conflict divorce can have on children really created an interest and a desire in me to be able to work with those families to attempt to, as we talk about in collaborative law, divorce with dignity, and to find a way to go your separate ways without completely destroying your lives, the other person's lives, and your children in the process. And I really believe that people can make great choices and can, as you kind of talk about, consciously uncouple. And I like to be part of that.
Yeah, divorce is something in my own practice I see the results of all the time. And that's sort of, you know, if it seems like I'm talking a lot about divorce and children and things like that in the divorce process, it's because it's important. I see the impacts on children in my office, teenagers, anger and a lot of volatility, substance abuse, promiscuity, high-risk behavior, acting out stuff. And then with a lot of the adults I work with who talk about their parents' divorce and the destruction that it caused. So this is an important thing for me. You know, we don't want to do too much of it, but this is an important conversation. So I appreciate you all taking the time out of your busy schedules. I know you're real busy. So I guess let's get right into what people should do if they're considering divorce. If you've come to the end of this union and you're looking across the table at your partner and you're saying, I think that's kind of a wrap. So I don't think anybody takes it lightly. Nobody goes into this, thinking that it's not going to have some significant consequences on their lives and long term. It's the end of sort of a dream. But what should they consider and how do they know? How do they know, first off, if their relationship is salvageable or not?
This is Ashley and Prentice. When a couple, for instance, that I'm working with, if I'm their marital therapist, reaches a point where they decide that ultimately divorce is probably the healthiest choice for their family, or if I have an individual client come in and they want to talk about whether or not that's the road that they want to go down, I always try and work with the couple or the individual, and my goal in that is for them to be able to say, especially if they have children, we did everything that we could. We tried our hardest, and in the end, it just wasn't right. And I think that's the question that you need to ask yourself. You know, I believe that divorce can be very healthy for families, but it's the way you go about it, and I think really making sure that you ask and you've looked at all the options and you really have tried. I think that's a really big piece, and if that's in a therapist's office, if that's going to see an attorney and talking about different options, I think that there's lots of ways that you can begin that process healthily.
A lot of people don't, you know, I think everybody should go to therapy, and that's not just a plug for my profession, but I think it's good to examine your own life and your own mm-hmm. choices. So is that something that you would recommend for somebody to say has never been to therapy, if they're considering divorce, to either go as a couple or individually? And what's the benefit to that?
So I absolutely, of course, have a bias as a therapist for therapy, but I really think that anyone that's going through a divorce, whether it's the adults in the process or the children or the family, should be seeing a therapist. You know, if you go in and you work with a therapist, or you send your child in to see a therapist and that person talks with you and says, you know, it seems like you're doing okay. I don't think this needs to be a long-term relationship. Well, then at least you know. But I think in particular for the kids, because they end up feeling so caught in the middle, whether or not it's the intention of their parents to do that, there's that loyalty to each person. They, of course, want their happy family to be together. They want those memories. They don't want that to end. They want more of the trips to Disney. They want the camping trips.
Right.
And to be able to go talk, primarily when I'm working with families, or children around divorce, I'm doing a lot of grief and loss work with them about the dream. You know, when people stand there and you get married, you don't think about the day that someday you'll be divorcing and separating. That's not why anyone starts this.
Yeah, if this doesn't work, we'll just go our separate ways.
So there's a lot of grief that goes into that, and I think it's really important to pay attention to that. And sometimes just the power of sitting with someone or sitting with a child in that grief, I think, is incredibly important.
Okay, so somebody does not want to do the therapy route. That's just not for them, and they think they want to consult a lawyer. Allison, what are the things that people should ask a lawyer? What should they look for if they want to avoid, as you said, finding a lawyer who's going to say, okay, this is what we'll get for you? What should they look for? What kind of questions should they ask a lawyer if they're just going to go the lawyer route and consult somebody?
Well, first of all, I don't really think that there is a lawyer route and a non-lawyer route, because if you're going to get divorced, you're going to do it in court. It's the only way to do it. So there's a legal involvement no matter what happens. And I actually see a lot of people who are not ready to get a divorce. They want to know what their options are, what their rights might be, what a divorce might do to them. And then I never see them again, or I see them again in a year, or I see the same person once a year for 3 years, and then they decide to get a divorce. So I do a lot of talking to people who haven't made up their mind.
Sort of like therapy.
Right, except that obviously by the time you make an appointment with a lawyer, you're sort of saying the therapy route isn't working for me. And I do. I always ask people a lot of questions about, have they gone to therapy? Have they gone to couples therapy? You know, how did they get this far? If it's inevitable and they're going to get divorced, then I think some of the things that they need to look at is, I would start with the attorney's website, because most attorneys have websites and many of them are very communicative about how that lawyer approaches their work. And for example, if you go look at mine, there's a lot of talk about alternative dispute resolution and the collaborative process and how to talk to your kids and what to do and not do. That'd be your first clue. People should ask their lawyers what they think about alternative dispute resolution. Are there ways that you can resolve this out of court? What does the lawyer think about doing things in a cooperative fashion? What does the lawyer think about involving the kids and how the kids should be involved? I mean, there are actually lawyers out there who will let clients bring the kids into their office, which I think is completely inappropriate. There is never a reason why my client's kids should be in my office. That it can't have any good outcome. You should ask the lawyer how long they've been doing it, how much of their domestic relations practice involves kids, because there are lawyers who do divorces who won't do divorces involving kids.
Okay.
So that's not a good choice if you're looking, if you have kids. And then just like therapists, listen to yourself. You know, talk to the lawyer, and if you don't like the person, and if they don't seem to like you and you don't trust them, go find someone else. You know, you don't want a therapist you don't like. You don't want a dentist who scares you. You shouldn't be with a lawyer that you don't trust and who doesn't speak your language. And that's just a gut feeling, and people should trust it far more often than they do.
Okay, there is a obviously it's a legal proceeding, and you have to go through the legal system, but there's other means. I mean, I've heard things like kitchen table divorce, a disillusion, like people just come into their own kind of thing, but it all has to go through a court. So what are some of the other routes? Say somebody doesn't want to spend that kind of money on a lawyer. I hear that all the time. Like, I don't want to spend the money on a lawyer. We just want to do this ourselves. Is that a viable option for folks who are considering divorce?
Well, I want to start one thing, which is everyone should talk to a lawyer once, because you at least need to know what your options are, what your rights are, how the system works, and then you're in a place to decide, can you go one of those other routes? The big mistake that I see people make is to say, I want to do this cheap, I want to do this fast, and don't bother me with the details. Anybody who does their divorce with children, cheap and fast, is looking for problems later. The problems that you didn't solve, that you didn't talk about, that you didn't spend time addressing, are going to come back to haunt you.
Okay, Judge Cole, what are some of the other means?
Set me up there. First of all, I think the kitchen table divorce, I'm assuming, is a dissolution.
Okay.
I'm assuming. So a dissolution is when both parties agree and they work through it together. There are a number of different options that people have. And let me just say, to start with, in Alaska, about 80% of our divorce filings of one divorce dissolution, whatever they are, involve self-represented people. So while they may have had an opportunity to speak with a lawyer, they're coming into court on their own. I think our culture, our courts, our bar, our community is evolving and recognizing that people often are doing this on their own. So we actually are developing a lot of resources for them. The court has the Family Law Self-Help Center that's available both online and by the phone. There are clinics all over the community for people to get advice. Lawyers are doing something called unbundled services, which is limited representation, limited scope representation. We have a lot more mediation and services available both through the court and privately. I mentioned earlier that one of the things I do is the Early Resolution Project. Now, this is where it's going to conflict a little bit with what Allison just said.
That's okay.
So the Early Resolution Project, which we also now have the Motion Resolution Project, that is, we bring people in who have a contested divorce, but we bring them early. So it's shortly after the answer is filed. So complaint, answer, we bring them in. We have volunteers. It's volunteer attorneys, and we also have mediators. Depending on the circumstances, we'll give them a mediator. Sometimes they each get a volunteer attorney, and sometimes they just come directly to me or to whatever judge is presiding for a judicially led settlement. The point of the program is to get people in early on and to help them resolve their case without protracted, painful litigation. Where Allison and I may differ a little bit is that I think that sometimes the longer it goes on, the more people are in court, the more litigation there is, the hostility gets worse. And our thought with this program, and so far our numbers seem to be bearing it out, our thought is that if we can get them in and resolve it before the temperature has risen, that people will avoid some of the animosity that comes with protracted litigation. And so far we've got a high success rate, about 80% success rate. I will say that where I absolutely agree with Allison is that the devil's in the details. So what we're trying to do with the program is to get people to think through all the various configurations and possibilities in the future so that obviously life changes, circumstances changes, but at least early on they come in with as comprehensive a plan as they possibly can.
Going to the professionals for professional advice. For those of you who might be tuning in late, my guests today are licensed marriage and family therapist Ashley Barrera, family law attorney Allison Mendel, and Alaska Family Court Magistrate Judge Suzanne Cole. Our focus today is divorce options, and in particular, how to reduce the impact on children. You can reach us with your questions or comments at our local phone number. That's 550-8433. Or call us toll-free if you're outside of Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. Something I want to clarify for listeners, you talked about mediation and alternative dispute resolution. How do those differ from a litigated divorce?
Well, this is Allison. There's no bright line because every so-called litigated divorce could involve alternative dispute resolution, okay, mediation, or a judicially led settlement. You can do a little litigation and then do a lot of settlement or mediation. You could try mediation and fall back into litigation. So it's not an either or usually. It's, you know, what can you do out of court and what do you have to go to court and do. But certainly, for example, the relatively simple situations that might be suitable for the early resolution program are also situations that could probably be resolved with the help of a professional mediator, with or without assistance from attorneys before, after, during. You know, there it's not a straight line.
Okay.
And, there's a lot of combinations, but really the goal ought to be stay out of court whenever possible. That's the overarching goal. Don't go argue in front of a judge unless you have no reasonable alternative.
What I often tell people when they appear in front of me is that if I'm going to help you reach settlement, whether that's a judicially led settlement conference or some version of mediation, the idea is to keep the decision making in your laps,
right?
And make sure that you have some control. You may have to compromise. You may not entirely like the result, but at least you have some control over the end, as opposed to throwing everything in the lap of somebody with a black robe who doesn't know your children, doesn't know your circumstances, and say, you make the decision for us because we can't. So at least it allows people to retain a little bit of control and power over their own lives.
Ashley, you mentioned collaborative law, and Allison, you're also a collaborative law practitioner, but Ashley, can you explain how the collaborative law process works a little bit versus versus the typical litigated divorce process?
Yeah, you know, Prentice, I'm going to back up just a little bit. And one of the thoughts that I had as I'm listening to Suzanne and Allison talk about these issues is how important it is that we are beginning to work collaboratively, that what you have in the room are two attorneys, you know, a magistrate judge now, and a mental health professional that are here to talk about options. Actually, you're also a mental health professional, Prentice, so there's four of us. And that's something that I've seen change in Anchorage in probably the last 4 years pretty significantly, is the way that we're coming together and we're working together in the best interests of families and most importantly, children. And collaborative law is one of those ways. In collaborative law, and Allison, feel free to please jump in at any point in time. They're each party, so the mother and the father, or if in the case of a same-sex couple, each person, each adult, has their own attorney. There's a mental health professional who serves as a communications facilitator. We're not providing therapy. We just happen to have a specialized background around mental health issues and communication, as well as a financial professional. And all of the decisions about children, all of the decisions about property, assets, debts, all get made around a table. We work together as a team. So, and ultimately, it's the parties that are making the decision with the guidance and the support and the specialized knowledge of the three disciplines that are all working together. Do you want to add to that at all, Allison?
One of the promises in a collaborative situation is that none of us, the professionals, will ever go to court with this
right.
couple. And that's a really important thing. We're not just positioning them to go win at trial or to throw their story in front of a judge. We're all promising that if you're going to go to court, you're going to do it without us. So we're really, really focused and dedicated on helping them resolve their problems and coming to an agreement entirely out of court. And then we take the agreement to court and have a judge approve it, which is necessary. But it's really focused on resolution by the people who are involved.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really like about it is, as we talk about the importance of details in the other work that I do as a co-parenting facilitator or as a parenting coordinator, where I'm generally seeing people post-litigation who are trying to get it together, trying to make decisions, or have, in the case of a parenting coordinator, are generally unable to reach agreements and have someone appointed to do that for them if they can't. A lot of the time that I spend in the beginning of a case is going, whoa, this parenting plan really needs some work. We need to really look at these details. It says that the transition, you know, the holidays are coming up, will occur on Thanksgiving. Well, what time on Thanksgiving? Is it the morning? Is it the evening? And so when you have, in the instance of a collaborative case, the mental health professional or the communications facilitator may work real extensively with the separating couple to make those decisions and to make sure it's really clear. And then we can kick it back to the attorneys to review with their clients. And what I really appreciate is that so many things that I don't think of because I don't have a legal background, or that an attorney doesn't think about because they don't have the mental health background or the child development background, really gets decided and discussed. And so you end up with a document that really works, in my opinion.
Yeah, in the collaborative cases that I've worked, it's really pretty cool. And I don't think the public realizes what's happening in the collaborative process and how hard you go to these trainings, the collaborative training, and there's lawyers and mental health professionals and financial planners all in the same room for a whole weekend talking about our own biases and how we look at the divorce process and trying to understand each other's perspective better. So, you know, Ashley and I are getting educated on the legal stuff, and the lawyers are getting educated on the mental health stuff, and the financial planners are doing both. So it's it really is remarkable that there's these groups of people that are working to better this, because divorce is a big problem. And divorce is something that, as we know, has huge impacts on kids and the adults involved as well. So I appreciate the fact that we can do that in this community. It's really neat to see that happening.
People always, the first thing they say when you tell them about this is, that sounds horrendously expensive because we've got four professionals and they're all talking and, you know, how could we afford that? My personal experience, and I've been doing it for more than 5 years now, collaborative divorce, is that it's cheaper than litigation. It's certainly not cheaper than a kitchen table divorce. But if you have complicated problems, any kind of substantial assets, kids with special needs, parents with special problems, it is much cheaper than litigating all those issues. And as Suzanne said, you retain control. You're not turning over control of your complicated life to somebody who doesn't know you and you are hopefully never going to see again. That's not an ideal way to make difficult decisions.
And what's cool about it is two lawyers from opposing or supposedly opposing sides sitting in the same room talking about the case and having a dialogue about what works. And collaborative looks at it as a work situation. Nobody wins in divorce, but you can come to something that works for both people, and everybody's got to give a little. And I think the attorneys that are trained in collaborative law really do, at least in my experience, have that approach. They understand, they're not hammering their clients to say, we got to get this and you can't, you know, don't talk to this other person. And so much of the litigated is like you're funneling everything through the lawyers and people aren't communicating. And as you said, Suzanne, it builds, you know, the heat builds and, you know, the fire gets hotter and people are saying, what's happening? And, you know, how much are we getting? So one thing I do want to touch on real quick is this is a 50-50 no fault state. Am I correct?
Okay. Not completely.
Well, it's a no-fault state.
It's a no-fault state. And if you think, I mean, what I understand, and certainly help us understand that better, 50-50 means that you kind of split the assets equally among people. But obviously, there's one partner may have huge income and the other partner may have chosen to stay at home and raise the kids. So what does no-fault mean? And, you know, if we're talking about 50-50, why is that incorrect?
Well, you're correct that we start from 50-50, but there are a lot of factors that the court's supposed to look at to decide whether 50-50 is the right outcome. And, you know, I have a lot of clients who come to me having done various kinds of internet research, and they say, this is a 50-50 state, and I'm going to be impoverished for the rest of my life because
right.
I don't have anything, and he's got millions in the bank.
That's not what that means.
It is not what that means. And, you know, if that is a worry that you have, what does 50-50 mean? You should consult at least once with a lawyer to kind of run through the parts of it and see where you fit on that, because there's a wide range of what the court can and should do in terms of 50-50. There is no rule that everybody gets 50%.
And let me jump in there a little bit on the no-fault piece. Even though everyone knows the term no-fault divorce, people often come to it thinking that the spouse who is at fault, whether it's due to infidelity or something else, the reality is that we really genuinely are a no-fault divorce state. So that means that regardless of what led to the divorce, it has absolutely no bearing on either the division of assets or debt, and little bearing on the issue of children, depending on what the circumstances are. I will say that oftentimes what I see is that people are desperate to place blame and to have a forum to talk about what led to the divorce.
Right.
Unfortunately, the courtroom and the actual divorce is not the place because it really doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. So that might be where the mental health practitioners need to come in because it really is not going to come in the courtroom.
It does not matter that Bob had a girlfriend for the last 10 years of the marriage. It doesn't matter. Things like addiction, things like that will come into play if there's a safety issue. But outside of a safety issue for children, there's no, I mean, being a jerk does not qualify.
It does not qualify.
I will say that certainly that would be the place of a therapist's office to perhaps process the end of the divorce, perhaps process why the affair occurred or the betrayal or the outcome of what that's like now. That's not something that I do when I'm working as a co-parenting facilitator, as a parenting coordinator. It is a present and future focused process that is focused on the children. And when I meet with people for their initial appointment with me, once I've been retained in a case, I say, all right, you get an hour. This is your time to tell me what you think is important for me to know. Get it out. Tell me, I understand, you know, that you're angry, you're sad, there's blame. Let me hear it. But then we're going to put it aside. I know the history. And now we're moving forward and making decisions about your children because the affair doesn't impact whether or not they have visitation, or I don't even like the word visitation, parenting time.
Right.
The reasons that your marriage end are generally none of the business of your children. I would say potentially with the exception of domestic violence,
right,
when that would often be very clear to a child.
Okay, we're at the halfway point of our show, so we're going to go ahead and take a short break. You want to remind folks that you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. My guests today are licensed marriage and family therapist Ashley Barrera, family law attorney Allison Mendel, and Alaska Family Court Magistrate Judge Suzanne Cole. Our focus for today is divorce options, and in particular, how to avoid hurting children in the process. You can reach us at 550-8433 or call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can email your questions to us at line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation on divorce and how to protect kids in the process. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guests today are licensed marriage and family therapist Ashley Barrera, family law attorney Allison Mendel, and Alaska Family Court Magistrate Judge Suzanne Cole. Our topic is divorce options, and in particular, how to avoid hurting your children in a high-conflict divorce. As always, you can email your questions or comments about today's show to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call locally at 550-8433 or toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. Please remember, the show repeats tonight at 8 p.m., so if you're listening to this on Monday evening, you'll be hearing a tape recording, and we won't be accepting phone calls. All right, so let's jump to something that's very important to me, and that's more of the kids stuff and talking about the impact of children. Now, Ashley, you mentioned two things I want to have you clarify for our listeners, and that is co-parent facilitation and parent coordination. Can you explain for folks what those two things are and how they're different?
Yeah, those are out-of-court processes. They're also not therapy, where a co-parenting facilitator is someone who will work with the parents to provide education about child development, about what the best interests of children are, and to ultimately facilitate communication between the parents so that they can make child-centric decisions. A co-parenting facilitation is something for people who are capable of doing that. Most people, I believe, are capable of doing that. Sometimes they just need the tools and the techniques and someone to help manage it. Sometimes just manage the conflict. It's not that people that come into my office don't have conflict. It's just how you do it. Do conflict well, essentially, and that's a lot of what my job is as a co-parenting facilitator. As a parenting coordinator, I have authority that's granted to me by the court system to make decisions around specific issues. I don't make decisions about the percentage of custody. If you have a 50-50 split, I can't make it 70-30. That's not my job. I don't change child support calculations or anything like that. But if parents can't make a decision about whether or not Susie can go to a sleepover or whether or not Jim says that he's interested in doing theater camp and soccer, and one parent wants theater camp and the other parent wants soccer and they can't agree, then I ultimately make that decision so that they're not constantly having to go back to court. That's one of the most beneficial ways. Ultimately, my goal as a parenting coordinator is to facilitate discussions so that the parents do make the final decision. But if they're not able to, if the conflict is just too high, then I have authority to go ahead and do so.
Now, I see a lot of parenting agreements that come into my office, and a parent will plop it down on, you know, and they'll give it, here's a copy of my parenting agreement. And I say, okay, and we start going through the points, and they disagree on everything that they spent all this money and time agreeing upon. So, and then they go back to court with all these petty things that, and I hear from them all the time, oh, the judge is really angry and they're tired of us coming back in front of them. So we've got to figure this out. But they don't, and then they file a motion and another motion and another motion, and they're spent another $10,000 arguing whether it's soccer or, you know, dance. So this parent coordination task force you mentioned, Judge Cole, can you talk about why that came about, why that's important? And I know it's been done all over the country for quite some time, but it's new here. What are you guys working on?
I believe it's up to, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, about 38 states that have parenting coordination programs that are active. And we are just coming to it now. The idea of the task force is to develop guidelines and a protocol so that whether it's court-based or private practitioners doing it, we're all sort of operating from the same playbook and the same principles in mind. The idea is the high conflict families, and the statistics seem to suggest that it's anywhere between 10 and 25% of families have high conflict that continues 2 to 3 years after the divorce.
So, sometimes 5 to 6 to 7.
Right. The studies are looking specifically at those 2 to 3 years. Right. But it's the high conflict group that continues on and are the ones that are filing those motions. We describe it in court as the multi-volume cases that just keep going and going. So the idea is to try to find another tool in the toolbox to help those families avoid coming to court and to reduce that level of conflict. I just want to throw in there, when I started doing this work years ago, I was surprised to learn that children of divorce do not fare any worse than children of intact families unless there's high conflict. Mm-hmm. It is the right. Children of high conflict divorce that have all the problems that you mentioned in the beginning. I had always grown up believing that children of divorce have all of those problems, but they really don't. It's just the conflict that causes it. So that's what we're trying to address through the trust.
That plays out in my practice as well, that very seldom do I hear people, like if they have, you know, a mental health issue they're coming to, it rarely is related to their parents who divorced well. You know, it almost has not, oh, my parents divorced really well and they came to our wedding and my kids and they, you know, hug each other and they're really happy to see each other. And, you know, that's obviously, it's a hard process, but you're absolutely right. Kids from parents who divorce well, really generally don't fare any worse. And that plays out in your practice as well, Ashley.
Absolutely. One of the things that I was reflecting on as listening to the two of you talk, especially with parenting coordination, the reason that it can be so successful and beneficial for children in particular is because it's a quick decision-making process. If we go back to the theater camp versus soccer example, by the time you get your motions filed and the responses and you get a court date and then a response from the presiding judge, summer could be over and now this child hasn't got to experience either of those because their parents just couldn't really get it together.
Yeah, you don't get to see Judge Cole for 3 months, yep. But you could see your parenting coordinator, Ashley, in 3 days.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's a huge difference. What does that do for the burden of the court? Does that take a lot of the load off? I assume you mentioned that most of you have high volume cases, that's what you call them, or
multi-volume.
So that reduces the burden. I mean, do you guys really get mad at families who keep coming in front of you?
I would never say that either.
Okay. Another question I have is like this parenting coordination task force. Are a lot of judges on board with this, or is it a small group of folks that are into the parenting coordination, or are most judges along with you getting educated on this and behind this?
We're still at the beginning phases, so I think it's an educational process now. We're hoping when Dr. Sullivan comes December 11th and 12th that he will have an opportunity to meet with some of the Anchorage judges, inform them a little bit more about what the process involves. In other states, it appears that the courts and the judges are very much on board with it and that they have endorsed it as a very successful mechanism to deal with some of the real entrenched families.
Prentice, I just want to go back to one of my pet peeves that I keep coming back to, and I think Susanna's a little bit wrong about what I don't like about early resolution, but I think some of the high conflict is set up by quick, not thoughtful decision-making at the beginning when they get those parenting plans that you see in your office that they don't like any part of it. I see people who come to me and say, well, we want a quick divorce. We want this done as soon as possible. We're still living together. We really can't move into separate residences until after the first of the year, and hopefully we will be divorced by then. And I say, wait, stop. I won't do this. You've never been apart. You've never single parented for a day. You don't know what it's going to be like. You don't know what issues are going to arise. You need to move slowly in this major decision-making process and see how it really works out. See how your kids react to being in two houses, to how long they can be away, to how well you can communicate. It's like saying you're going to go buy a Mercedes without ever driving one. I mean, it's a big, expensive thing, and it's going to last a long time. Why would you do that? People, if they had more assistance and longer at the front end to make their decisions, some of these high conflict people would have fewer conflicts after the fact.
So you're
certainly
saying,
not all of them.
You're saying, think about it, take your time.
See a therapist, see a lawyer, talk about your options, try things out. You know, there's no sense in buying the whole package before you know what's happening.
Well, and if I could jump in there again, I think that's the beauty of having professionals involved, because given all of our experiences, we have some of the foresight to know what the issues might be that come up. For example,
right.
I'm always amazed at the people that come into court unrepresented, who have not thought about, you know, when their toddler gets to school age and what's going to happen then, or the military families who have not thought about the change in duty station and what they're going to do then. And so it's just sort of thinking through all the various possibilities that might arise and how you want to deal with it when they do.
I think a lot of the time the words that come out of my mouth are developmentally, this is what your child needs right now. Developmentally, that's a great idea, but not for a 3-year-old. That's a great idea for a 10-year-old. Let's talk about that when we get to the development of your parenting plan for your 10 to 12-year-old child. but that doesn't work here. And when people hear those words, and I think when they start to really look at it from a child development perspective, once they have that education, that I see a big shift in their thinking and the decisions that they make. I think a lot of times because people, they just don't know. I'll hear people say, you know, well, I want 50-50 because it's my right. And so we'll talk about, you know, certainly, of course, you want to spend as much time with your child as possible. How do we make that work so that your child's getting to see both parents right now? Because, you know, he or she is 18 months old or 3 years old, and an 18-month-old can't go week to week. It just doesn't work.
I want to bring up a different kind of high conflict couple that I know we've been seeing more and more of in recent years, and that is adults who barely have a relationship. They got together, they probably got pregnant first and married second. They managed to maintain the relationship for a month and a half, and now they're getting a divorce. That is a whole different project. And telling those people to start making joint decisions for the best interest of their child, they've never even decided where to go to dinner together. And they have no shared assumptions. They have no shared history. They're not really involved with each other's family. It's very difficult. And treating those couples as though they were people who were together 10 years and have all that shared experience, right. The same answers don't work. And it's really a challenge for the lawyers, the court system, the therapists. It's a whole different kettle of fish.
My experience is that like divorce is something that creates so many like deep, deep feelings of fear and hurt and resentment and anger and revenge. And, you know, you can jealousy, insecurity, you go on and on with this stuff. And I had a couple that was starting this divorce process and they started to mire down in those sorts of feelings and started to bicker. And for 6 months, I had them come to therapy every like couple weeks, and they would bring a picture of their children and they would set it on the table in front of them before we began our discussions. I would ask them to look at their children and reflect on what they're doing here. Goes back to that conscious uncoupling idea that Gwyneth Paltrow so famously threw out there a long time ago, but that can be done. And if you can push through your own feelings about your partner, so many of the kids that I work with, and especially in the parental alienation cases, which is what Dr. Sullivan talked about, your feelings for the feelings that the children have for the parent are based on your feelings that you have about your ex-spouse. And that's really, really painful for kids because they can't make that developmentally, that decision.
You know, one of the things that I will hear people talk about, whether it's in therapy or it's in, you know, any of the forms of alternative dispute resolution is, you know, I just can't wait to the day that my child sees their other parent for who they really are.
Yeah.
And I always stop people and say, and I just have to take a moment right now and think about how devastating that will be for your child. Because there are cases where one parent is doing things that are severely damaging or there's been abuse or addiction. And I just try and bring it back for that parent. Because I think, you know, the parent, I think, thinks on some level that it'll be, finally, they're going to see this person the way I see them through my eyes. Mm-hmm. But that's the parent for that child. I mean, the grief and loss, and again, I go back to grief and loss, will be profound. And I think people need to be prepared to watch your child go through that pain. It's hard.
I also serve as a parenting coordinator in a couple of cases. And I will say, I think part of the role of being a parenting coordinator is reminding the parents over and over and over again, this is about your children. It's not about you. It's about your children. And, you know, Ashley brought up the word rights, that parents will come in thinking, you know, these are my rights. And I feel like often my job is to say, yes, you have rights, but this isn't about your rights. It isn't about you. We have to focus on the kids.
And your child has a right to love and have a relationship with each of their parents. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. If you're just joining us late, my guests today are licensed marriage and family therapist Ashley Barrera, family law attorney Allison Mendel, and Alaska Family Court Magistrate Judge Suzanne Cole. Our focus today is divorce options with a focus on how to protect kids from the impacts of divorce. You can call us with your questions or comments for the next, I don't know, 7 or 8 minutes at 550-8433 or toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get a question is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Quick question about folks. There's a lot of people without very you know, without means who want to get a divorce. Now, you mentioned a little bit about some of the community stuff that's going on. Can you speak a little? Somebody just doesn't have the money to hire an attorney because they're expensive. Are there pro bono services? How should somebody go about that?
It's really very difficult, and the amount of resources available to people are completely inadequate to the demand. So you have to start there. As Suzanne said earlier, the court system does have the Family Law Self-Help Center, but that's not a source of advice, not legal advice. They will help you understand how to make the court work to do what you want it to do, but they're not going to give you legal advice. There are legal services providers, but you have to be quite poor to get legal services, and poverty is not enough. You have to have some other factor like domestic violence or some other reason why they would represent you in your case. So that leaves practically everybody else trying to right. get the job done some other way. Almost all family lawyers will see you on an hour-to-hour basis, you know, come in and have a consultation. You know, if you come in and have a consultation with me, it'll take an hour to an hour and a half. And in that amount of time, I can tell you a lot of things about what you should and shouldn't do, even if I never see you again. And there are lots of lawyers who will do that. And that just that one investment in 1 hour of time will be very, very valuable to you if you have no other resources and have to do it yourself. Suzanne also mentioned unbundled services, which is, you know, now legal under a bar rule that didn't used to exist, where, for example, you have a divorce that's not so complicated except for this one issue about child support, and their parents are self-employed and there are all these weird things going on. You could hire me just to do the child support, and I can actually go to court and represent you in court about child support while you do all the rest of it yourself. That didn't used to be allowed, and that's now an option. You can also do another kind of unbundled services where you do all the court work yourself and you consult me or someone else who does it in between times and say, okay, I saw Judge Cole. She said this and that. I have to do this and that. How do I do that? I work with you on how to do that. And then you go back to Judge Cole and do it. So that can be very helpful to people with modest means and fairly complicated problems. So there's a lot of options. Also, if you feel like you have the money to hire a lawyer, but your funds are limited, you need to be really upfront with the lawyer about what you can afford to pay, how that's going to work, who's
going to
pay it.
Take advantage of your time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And consider lesser expensive options. You know, mediation is going to be less expensive. There are mediators out there. We also have a court-based mediation program that may or may not be available depending on income.
Now, mediation is when the couple meets with one person, right? Correct? And typically that's how the mediation, then you go through that one person to help you decide.
Correct.
It
really depends. It's very flexible. That's one way to do it. Both people can come with lawyers and the mediator, and it's still probably cheaper than seeing a judge with two lawyers.
Right.
You can talk to a lawyer before you go to mediation and say, okay, here's my issues. You know, what are the possible solutions? What are my rights? And then you go to the mediator. You can go to the mediator and then the lawyer, which is often really important because even if you come to an agreement with the mediator, they're not going to write it up for court. Somebody has to write up the thing that goes to the judge. And you're better off having a lawyer do that than trusting in your own drafting skills to explain what the deal really is.
Okay, so I have a email, which is an interesting question. You guys can answer it, or I don't know if you, maybe you can. Can a child, I assume under the age of 18, because that's the definition of a child, request a paternity test from their divorced parents? That's obviously somebody, or maybe somebody who wants to know for a reason, but is that something anybody has history with or knows about?
Well, if the child is under 18, you know, you have to get an adult to bring that claim for
right.
you. If you're talking about your parents were divorced years ago and now you're 18 and you want a paternity test, you could ask for it. I don't think that you're going to get it.
I've certainly never seen it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's not something we have a good answer to.
No.
I just wanted to mention two other things. The Bar Association does have a pro bono program for lawyers, although, you know, it's a limited resource right. that's available. The court system has also just started a parenting plan facilitation program in dissolutions with kids. If people are filing without having thought through everything, we'll send them to a facilitator to develop a parenting plan.
But just a caution, you cannot go to the bar and ask for a pro bono lawyer.
Right.
The lawyers are provided through the legal services program, like Alaska Legal Services or the Council
on Domestic Violence.
So you can't just call up somebody and say, are you the pro bono lawyer?
Right. All right, Ashley, you have something to add?
I was going to add that, for instance, in the private sector where I'm at, my services as a co-parenting facilitator, say if I'm working with a couple to develop their parenting plan as they begin the process, my services are split equally between the parties. And so that certainly is significantly cheaper than each of you paying your own attorney mm-hmm. as opposed to splitting my fees. And so I think that that's another option that's out there that doesn't involve the court system right away.
Okay. This is another emailed question. Are there gender biases that affect outcomes of divorce negotiations? For example, more parenting time given to mothers rather than fathers? Moving away from that? It used to be that way.
You know, there are all kinds of biases. And any time you take your dispute to a judge, the judge has their own personal biases, and they're going to come into play, and you may never find out what they are. There is certainly no broad systemic bias in favor of giving mothers more time than fathers. It just doesn't happen anymore. But I do see gender biases working out in strange ways in divorces if either parent is acting in ways atypical from their gender, like the dad as being the house husband. Strange things can happen.
Right.
So that's just another area where if you make your own decisions out of court, you're likely to come out better off.
Well, and I'll also say there's been some studies that have been done that show that fathers' involvement in children's lives make a huge positive impact. So I think the courts have moved away from the maternal preference legally, but I think that there's awareness that father's involvement is hugely important.
Can each of you give me a take-home point from this show or something you want divorcing families to remember? Start with you, Suzanne.
Very quickly, I would say the devil's in the details. Please, please, please think that through and also put your children's needs first.
Allison?
I would certainly agree with those things. I would just say there are a lot of different ways to involve lawyers in your divorce. You know, not all of them are going to trial and having a bloodbath. So think about what you want, what information you need, and what's the best way for your family.
Ashley?
I would just encourage people to use a systemic approach and to look at all of the resources that you have out there, whether it's a financial professional, a mental health professional with specialized knowledge in child development, and an attorney, and how you can use those pieces and parts together, and always just be child-centric.
Well, as we wrap up here, of course, we just got 3 phone calls, but we cannot take them. So I'd like to thank you each for coming in today. I appreciate y'all taking the time to
thank
come
you.
See us.
Thank you very much.
My thanks to today's guests. I appreciate, obviously, each of you coming in. Please remember to check out the variety of links and information we have available on today's topic. Just go to alaskapublic.org and you can check out the resources there. You can find that link at alaskapublic.org. As always, feel free to share your thoughts or comments about today's show with us at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. Well, each year, roughly 3,700 Alaskans hear the words, "You have cancer." Managing the physical and emotional symptoms of cancer diagnosis can be challenging for patients and their families. There exists a team-based approach. So please join Dr. Woodard and his guests from the American Cancer Society to discuss palliative care. Pat Yak is the Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer for today's show. Thanks for joining me today on Line 1. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day.
Well,
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.